This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
This episode of the KMP Show is brought to you by Ticket Network. The MLB season is in full swing, and the number one place to get tickets to your favorite team is ticketnetwork.kandpshow.com. That's ticketnetwork.kandpshow.com. Ticket Network has the tickets where you want them, when you want them, at the best prices available. Use our exclusive link, ticketnetwork.kandpshow.com, to support the show. We thank you. Welcome, everybody, to the KMP Show, episode number 38. Got a little quickie here, and it is a big one, a big quickie. I don't know if that's really a thing, but for the first time ever in KMP Show history, we are going to have a guest on. I am your host, Jonathan Playtech, and on the hotline right now is Danny Parkins. You can hear him from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. on 670 The Score, WSCR in Chicago, and you can find that digital stream at 670thescore.com. Mr. Parkins, hello, and welcome to the show.
John, thanks a lot for having me, man. It's an honor to be the first guest in the show's history.
I know. You know, I was going to ask you, you know, when you got the call, finally, you know, you were waiting on it. I know you were. And when you finally got the call and you picked up and said, Danny, we want you for the KMP Show. Can you explain to us what's that like? I know it's a faux pas, but talk about your feeling when the KMP Show finally broke its streak and decided to bring you on as a guest starring host. Can you explain to the fans how it feels?
Yeah, I honestly feel like I made it, you know, getting accepted into the most prestigious journalism school in the country, getting my first job, getting promoted, being number one in afternoon drive in the ratings, breaking stories, getting promoted to Chicago, all pales in comparison than coming on the show.
Right. Yeah. A crappy middling podcast. Hosted by two jerkwads.
Don't sell yourself short, Judge. You're a tremendous slouch.
I was actually thinking about making another Caddyshack reference, but you went there first, so I feel like now anything's game. But you're a Chicago guy, and when you first entered the market in Chicago, I was told repeatedly that you're a Chicago guy, and Chicago guy Danny Parkins is from Chicago. He knows Chicago, and he's a Chicago guy. I just want to know quickly, I mean, before we get into anything, did that sound, was that really as weird as it sounded to me, that marketing ploy when you came into the market?
They didn't run it by me. Let's put it that way.
All right.
Yeah, it was, and I, to be honest, I probably should have been a little bit more forceful with it at the beginning, but they asked me to record, they're called liners, when I was still working in Kansas City. And so I hadn't signed a contract yet. It wasn't public that I was leaving, but my then fiance knew about it. My co-hosts there knew about it. I needed to find where I was going to live in Chicago. It was all very fast. And so, you know, the new boss who wants you to start working for him and is giving you your dream job, but you haven't actually signed the contract yet, but they want to get all of the production and the liners and the imaging like ready to go. And it's all saying Chicago guy. Like I just did it and sent it back and didn't really think about what it would sound like airing twice an hour, every hour, 24 hours. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous, obviously, but there's a reason behind it, but go ahead.
Well, absolutely. I mean, of course, I heard it and I understood it. I understood why, because when you're coming in from out of market, and you are from Chicago, that's not a lie, but the listener base, people are generally stupid. And when you have somebody coming from a different town, and it would have been worse if you would have been coming from St. Louis, believe you me, because I've had the inverse of that when I was interviewing for a gig in St. Louis. They were like, how do you think the listeners will accept you being from Chicago? And I'm like, I don't know, because I'm not an asshole. What do you want from me? But they do it because they don't want the listeners to think like, this is an interloper. He's not supposed to be here. He's a Kansas City guy. Why is he being forced on us in Chicago? And of course, when you're getting your dream job, it's a little hard to say no. Be like, you know what, Skip, sorry, but until the ink is dry on that contract, I'm going to sit pat and then I'll get to work for you. So I understand it completely. I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't being crazy and overly critical.
No, no, you know, and it wasn't that I wasn't happy to do the work. It was just that I, like, is that how I would have necessarily marketed myself in every promotion? Probably not, right? Like, I don't think that there's anything wrong with letting people know that the guy that they hired from Kansas City is not a Kansas Cityan, but that he is a Chicagoan. But you, it could have been done more subtly, like it, whether it's me talking about going to Cubs games as a kid, me talking about going to Bulls games as a kid. It could have been done more anecdotally as opposed to beating people over the head with it, because it wasn't just Chicago guy Danny Parkins. It was then when people realized, like, my actual whole story, and that it was born in the city, lived in the city through third grade, and then was raised in the suburbs. You also get the people that, like, hate the North Shore and hate the suburbs. Yeah. And so, well, it could, but, like, Chicago area native Danny Parkins, you know what I mean? Like, Glenn Knight, North suburban kid, like, none of that works so well in promotion. So then you had the people that are, like, Chicagoans, but that hate when people from the suburbs say that they're Chicagoans, and all sorts of stuff. So it, people mocked it, and I think that we did a good job of mocking it, because as soon as I got to town and I heard it, I was like, oh, God, I want to kick my own ass. And so that's pretty much what happened.
Yeah, well, I was listening, a big fan of your – I mean, I'm a big fan of your show. I'm usually a regular listener when I'm at the gym, you know, on the bike. It's, you get me through my workout. But when you were first on the air, I want to say it was like the first week, I heard you making fun of it, and I thought, you know what? I can deal with the overwrought Syracusian voice for a bit if this guy is as cool as he sounds making fun of his own promos. And I'm just kidding about the Syracusian thing. I know it's the most prestigious journalism and broadcasting school in the country, right?
Yeah, it is. You know, listen, people think the voice thing is also really weird to me. This is my voice. I am sitting on my couch talking to you right now with my dog on my lap, the Cubs game on mute, reclining. You know what I mean? Like, this is right, just how I talk. I have a baritone voice. And I did go to journalism school, and I do have an okay vocabulary, so I can string a few sentences together. And so people are like, wow, what a broadcaster.
It's an affected voice.
Yeah, Johnny Joe broadcaster with his teasing and his hosting. And I'm like, so I'm doing a radio show? Like, it's an odd criticism. Like, I don't think that I'm Brockmire on the air because it is my voice. So people have they've gotten used to it, and I understand that, you know, it's the station of Mike North and Chicago guys and that sort of thing. So I get that maybe I sound a little differently than other people have, but I am not doing an act, if you will.
Yeah, I get that. I got that a lot too. In the media business that I was in, a lot of people would come, you know, why are you putting on that voice? What's your real voice like? And this is my real voice. This is how I sound. And it's actually difficult for me being a voiceover guy, is that the big thing now in voiceover work is casual. Everybody wants casual sounding. Everybody wants conversational, is the big buzz term. So I have to go up an octave or two to like cut out the bass of my voice and just be kind of like this guy and talking about the new Honda that you want to buy at the local Honda dealership, when my real voice is somewhere down here. But people, you know, people hear me doing stuff, and then they hear me, and then they go, well, wait, which one is your real voice? And it's like, well, they're all my real voice, but this is my natural resting voice. It's like a pitcher resting at 95 miles an hour. This is where I rest with my voice.
Right. But, I mean, this is where my voice rests also. But like the other thing that people just, you know, don't appreciate, and it's fine, right? It's not a complaint. If you don't do the job, then you just don't know what you would do. But if I took any guy off the street and walked him into, you know, the Prudential building where the Score is, and I was having a conversation with him walking through the lobby and getting his visitor's pass, and then walking him up to the elevator and going up to the ninth floor, and he thinks that he's just going to, like, be an observer in the studio. And then we're like, oh yeah, and by the way, you're hosting for the next hour. My guess is nerves, or his octave, or his desire to perform, and, you know what I mean, enunciate. My guess is his voice is going to change a little bit. Like, we are entertainers, right? So you want to put on the best version of yourself, and you do want to have energy, because, like you said, we're trying to get you through your workout and get people through their 9 to 5 or whatever. So if I was just talking like this and like, you know, if I was, you know, well, whatever, I mean, the Cubs and then the Bulls, I'd put you to sleep. And that's not what the job is. So it's my voice. It's my resting voice, to use your thing, but with energy and inflection and performance. That's, I guess, how I would describe it.
Yeah, I mean, you're putting on a show. When that light goes on, when the camera goes on, or whatever you're doing, it's time to go. It's go time, and you are performing. You're a performer first, and then I guess what would be number two? Like just a guy at the end of the bar talking about sports. You want to relate to the guy that talks about sports at the end of the bar, but the reality is that you're a performer and you're putting on a show, and it is better to have what you have, the inflection and the intonation, than to not have it and just be, you know, just kind of, well, you know. Of course, NPR gets away with it, and I have no idea how the hell they do that. But
you know, it's just you're serving a different master. Like, yeah. You know, everybody in the building, you know, talks when they're on the air. They're trying to be like the, you know, like you said, energetic, engaged version of themselves. And then it just, frankly, the stronger, more distinct voice you have, the stronger and more distinct it becomes when you turn that on. So I have a natural low toned baritone voice, and then you get on the radio and you are doing your thing. So it, mm-hmm. I think, And I'd rather err on the side of where my voice is than on the side of every time my boss hears me, he'd be like, pick it up, more energy, come on, I got to hear you. You know, you're fading into the background. Like, I'd rather stand out and, like, smack people in the face with my voice than be background noise. So I'm fine with it.
Now, I wanted to ask you, I did want to get your thoughts. You mentioned the Cubs and Bulls, and as luck would have it, there's a lot of a little bit of news surrounding both. But dream Chicago guy Denny Parkins, but you do get your dream job listening to the score growing up. Was there a little bit of nerves that first time, the first words you spoke on the score as the new midday host, 9 a.m. to 1, Spiegel and Parkins? Was there a little bit of nerves, or were you so much of a pro at that point, so many reps, that it was just, all right, flip the button, let's do a damn show, let's get this party started?
I mean, I didn't want to get fired and have to move back to Kansas City, and I still don't. So I think if you don't have professional discomfort, then you can risk becoming complacent and settling in and not striving to be great and just honestly, like, not working very hard. And I think that's something that happens all across my industry. And yep. So, no, I got my dream job. Now I want to be good at my dream job. And then I want to be considered the best at my dream job. And then I want to be the number one show. And, you know, there's always more that you can. I'm like way too competitive and way too career oriented and like way too singularly focused. Probably too much of my own identity is wrapped up in my career. Like if I was going to sit on a psychiatrist's couch. So no, I didn't look at it like, oh, I've made it because now I have it. Like, you know, I don't get me wrong. Like I poured a nice glass of scotch and celebrated, and I'm thrilled with where I'm at 30 years old and all of that. Like I'm happy and I'm proud and that I'm totally happy with my job now. But if you don't have professional discomfort where you're still out trying to prove yourself, then I just think your complacency is going to make you not very good at this.
Yeah. That's how you fall asleep on the air.
Yes,
like,
that's how you,
like
that's
somebody
how you fall,
in your industry did. Yeah,
yeah. How you fall asleep on the air? How you don't prep? How you justify missing more games or coming in later and leaving earlier? And I'll just wing it, and we'll see where it goes. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but Danny, that's my whole life is winging it, buddy. I mean, come on, let's not denigrate winging it, because there's something to be said for winging it. By golly, I'll tell you what,
yeah,
man.
Hey, man. Listen, fake it till you make it, right? Like, who knows? Right. Maybe I will be exposed as a huge fraud, and I will be fired, and I'll have to get out of the business. But until that day comes, I'm going to bust my ass to stay right where I am, or better.
All right, then. What kind of scotch did you pour? What do you got? What's your go-to celebratory scotch? Scotch Draft. I'm like Spiegel Part 2. Scotch Draft. Here we go.
Yeah,
that one.
that was the Lagavulin 16, I believe, is what that is, is is what it was. You know, I have the Glenn Levitt 18, the Lagavulin 16, Glenn Morangi. I have different scotches. Basil Hayden's on the rocks is probably my most, but that's a bourbon, obviously. That's my most like consistent drink, I would say, at this point, if I'm going liquor. But yeah, you know, I broke out the nice bottle of scotch for that one, of course.
So you're a single malt guy. You're a fan of the single malts over blending.
Oh. Mm. Yes, that's exactly right.
All right. Well, I do have a recommendation for you. If you're ever, now that you're big time in the third largest media market in the country, maybe you'll never fall on hard times again. And I hope you don't. But if you ever need to bargain buy for your scotch, the Costco brand 16-year-old single malt scotch is indistinguishable from Macallan 16. I cannot tell the difference. Yeah, I can't tell the difference. I've had both. I've had both bottles lined up and poured from them indiscriminately throughout the night, and maybe that's why later on I couldn't tell. But, yeah, I cannot tell the difference between the two. And they have a 24-year-old scotch that they sell for like $80, which I'm assuming is going to be glorious when I find it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That is worth noting. It was a career achievement to come on the podcast, but now it was actually worthwhile. That's tremendous.
Made it worth. Yeah, now you can save a couple bucks when you're trying to go high end. Yeah, you just get one of those. I don't even know what they're called. They're not called decanters when it's scotch. Whatever it's called, one of those crystal thingies that like Jack Donaghy would pour his scotch from. You get one of those, you pour that Kirkland stuff in there. I mean, you can keep the good stuff, like your Johnny Walker and your Glenmorangie, like 24, whatever you like that's high end. But your friends come over like, hey, can I get some scotch? And you go, yeah. And you can tell them it's Macallan, and they'll probably never know, unless they're like a huge scotch snob.
Yeah, and I am not. So I just enjoy a good pour over a rock or two. It's delicious.
Yeah, there you go. Let's sit back, watch the Cubs game, and enjoy. You know, don't get, because you got work tomorrow, right? So you don't want to get too sauced or anything like that, but just chill out, lay back with a nice little scotch and watch the Cubs. Now, there was a little bit of breaking news here. Bob Nightingale tweeted out that Addison Russell's wife won't speak to MLB investigators. This is from USA Today. Melissa Russell, the wife of Chicago Cubs shortstop Addison Russell, has filed for divorce and informed her attorney that she will not speak to Major League Baseball investigators about allegations of abuse against her husband, a decision that will hamper the league's investigation into the matter. Now, being a guy that talks about the Cubs every day, where do you sit on this, Mr. Parkins? Is this a welcome? I guess welcome is the wrong word, but for lack of a better phrase, are you welcoming this? Is this kind of a, okay, we can start to put this thing to bed, this thing with Addison Russell and the Instagram allegations of domestic violence?
You know, I think that it frankly was, I mean, it's already been put to bed in some ways because there was no more news that came out of it. The situation is just each one of these instances, and it happens too often in sports, and it happens too often in society, right? It's not a sports problem. It's a societal problem. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, the sports media, I think, has gotten way too educated and familiar with talking about these issues because it keeps coming up. And so it's disheartening, to say the least. But, you know, I am not interested in the marital problems of the Russell family. I don't find it to be interesting. I don't find it to be my business. I'm just uncomfortable with the entire thing. Like, if he cheated on her, that is their business. That is not illegal. It is immoral, but it is not my morality to pledge onto them. If he hit her, well, then that is a legal matter. And then that is a matter that will deal, that could end with suspensions and criminal charges, and it affects the baseball, and it's deplorable, and all of that sort of thing. So that, not that it's my Danny Parkins business, but that is the public's business if it relates to a baseball suspension for a public figure or legal matters and all that. But as of now, it was a third-party allegation made on social media that's been deleted, and she's not participating in the investigation, according to Major League Baseball. She supposedly didn't want that information out there in the first place. And I don't see any scenario at this point where he gets suspended, because it looks like they're going to get divorced and move on. And then that's an issue for the Russell family. So I have no idea.
Then it's back to none of your business. at that point.
Exactly. So I don't know if it happened or not. I am left to give him the presumption of innocence, but it will always, you know, you will always be able to Google search Addison Russell domestic violence. That will come up with him for the rest of his life. But it's, if there is no suspension and there is no charge and there is no statement or interview or account, we don't really have anything to go off on that. And now it's just a matter of a very young couple with a very young child getting divorced at a very young age. And I don't see how any of that is relevant to the Cubs or my radio show. So if the domestic violence stuff comes up again, then we will talk about it. But as long as it stays in divorce court, I can't imagine it being too relevant going forward.
Yeah, because beyond that, then all of a sudden you're TMZ, and you're actively looking for things that are none of your business to make your business to talk about on a radio show, on a blog, using the, not talking about you specifically here, Danny, but just about anybody. Yeah, that's a,
also,
you know what?
Also, if we were going to report on the infidelity of athletes, I mean,
there's a lot of it going on.
It's not that I know a bunch of it or anything like that, but you could just stake out a hotel lobby of any team that's on the road and see what's going on. You know what I mean? It's just that is between consenting adults and situations within a household and a marriage, and it is just none of our damn business. And so as long as everything is legal, it is not really my job to judge them morally, is how I look at it.
How do you judge Kyle Schwarber? Moving on from this this seriousness, but you know, over his last 15 games here, 49 plate appearances, he's got a batting line of .220, .347, .585. And I think I saw a graphic, I forget from whom, but he's been creeping back up the batting order via Joe Maddon, you know, day in and day out. Were you ever in the camp that Schwarber could benefit from some time in the minor leagues? Did that ever occur to you? Was that ever like, well, you know, if we ever get to this point, then he probably needs to go down. But were you ever in that camp at all? Was that on the fringes for you as a fan? Or as a pundit?
I mean, I think we were a step away from it. Like, you can't go any further down in the lineup than batting ninth and sitting against lefties. So, you know,
true, yeah.
So, you know what I mean? So like, what now, did I think I would learn anything about Kyle Schwarber if he crushed Triple A pitching? No, but maybe he just needed to get his confidence back. So, you know, I didn't see it coming. I didn't think that it would be particularly useful or telling or anything like that. But did I think that it was in play in a legitimate discussion? Yeah, he started the year batting leadoff, and we were comping him to Babe Ruth. And 40 games into the season, he wasn't facing left-handed pitching, and he was batting ninth occasionally. So, you know,
that's Babe effing Ruth to you, Danny. Babe effing Ruth, right. Please get the quote right. Thank you.
Okay. Right. So, I mean, it was... It was absolutely a legitimate conversation. And, you know, it's an odd reckoning for Schwarber. You know, he is, in terms of the back of his baseball card, it's still less than a full year of major league games and service time. So, you know, I think he's better than a 180 hitter. Like, I don't think he's Adam Dunn, but I also thought, you know, before the season that he would maybe be an MVP candidate who could hit over 40 home runs and hit .280. And now that seems to be a drastic overstatement of what he can be. So I'm hoping that he's somewhere between Babe Effin Ruth and Adam Dunn. And
that's which incarnation of Adam Dunn, though? Because those, since when he was on the Reds, that was pretty okey doke. It was only appendectomy Adam Dunn. That was
right. God. People are talking about, like, White Sox Adam Dunn. I love Schwarber. I think that the legend stuff, people are like, oh, we overrated him. It's like, well, we overrated him because he did really well for
an extended period.
Well, and even if it wasn't that extended, it was, he just did really well in the biggest games against the best teams, right? Like, he set a franchise postseason record for home runs in his first postseason with 5 in 2015. And then he did something that had never been done in the history of the sport in 2016. And they went to the NLCS in 2015 and won the World Series in 2016. So to me, it was pretty reasonable why and Theo and the current management group deserved all of the benefit of the doubt in their evaluation of him and other players. So to me, like the legendary stature of Kyle Schwarber, it wasn't confusing as to how it got there. Like, he earned every bit of the hype, and now it's just crashing back down to earth, which is why I assume it, the end result is going to be somewhere in the middle. Once we get to, you know, 1,500 plate appearances, I'm assuming that this is going to work itself out. But as of right now, I think this is, you know, the opposite end of the spectrum. If, like, you know, spitting on Andrew Miller sliders and Corey Kluber cutters was Babe Effin' Ruth, and hitting 180 is worse than White Sox Adam Dunn, like, I'm assuming it's somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I've enjoyed this. I mean, in a, from an observer standpoint, I've really enjoyed watching other people try to figure out what is the real Kyle Schwarber, because coming into the season, it was right and worth all the hype and worth all the, oh my God, what can he do? What is he finally going to do this year? He's healthy now. And after the run coming back, the World Series run coming back from the knee injury, and now finally he's going to be healthy, got a full healthy offseason, and now he's ready to go. What is he going to do? And I've enjoyed watching the fluctuation, the going, you know, what was the longest stretch? I think, 20 at bats or something like that without registering a hit and striking out a ton, and now seemingly turning it around, you know, a 585 slugging and a 366 ISO over his last 15 games, despite a 220 batting average, is, I think, you're starting to see more of that, of him spitting that version you talked about, spitting on cutters and sliders outside the zone and knowing what he can hit and then hitting it when he swings at the pitch. So it's been a lot of fun. I'm really interested in him, seeing what he will become. What is the real Kyle Schwarber? But do you think?
Yeah, I agree. And hopefully he has 20 homers in the second half of the season, and the hype gets back to being ridiculous again, because that was pretty fun too.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Is that ball still up there in the plexiglass, or did they take that down?
I think they took it down finally, but that was awesome when they did that.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. A fun postseason moment. I where was I when I saw that happen? I want to say, I was waiting for a train. I think I was waiting for a train home, and I watched it at Union Station. That was a really cool home run. But do you think they need pitching? Is that still a dire need, or do you think can they coast and see where they are a little bit closer to the deadline, or do you think they need to go out and find pitching right now?
I mean, I think that, you know, if they could add pitching right now, they would, but that's just not how it works. It takes two to tango, and the second wild card team makes so many more teams in it than not, that teams, you know, there's a reason why it's the, you know, deadlines make deals is the expression, because teams want to wait. You know, it's not fun to be a seller. And if you're going to be a seller, why would you sell now when you could sell in a month, and maybe you sell more tickets over the next month or so? Like, it's a business, and maybe your team goes and rattles off 15 wins out of 19 games or something like that. So, you know, if they could add Chris Archer tomorrow, would they? Of course. But deals don't happen this early for a reason. The calls start picking up, the team starts scouting more because the draft is over. But yes, they need pitching. I think that's obvious, especially with, you know, Arrieta badness, Lackey inconsistency, Hendricks injury, Montgomery and Butler inexperience, and John Lester finally dropping his ERA under 4. Like, they have one starting pitcher right now that you would feel comfortable giving the ball to in a playoff series. You need 3. So, you know, maybe Hendricks and Arrieta can get there, and maybe Butler or Montgomery finishes really strong. But I do still think they're going to make the playoffs, and I do think that a playoff game will be started by someone who is not currently on the Cubs roster. So, yes, they need a starter, but I don't or two, but I don't think that that's going to happen for a month or so.
Do you, your Cubs GM, new Cubs general manager Danny Parkins, are you protecting Eloy Jimenez as best you can? Or if somebody calls and says, you know, we got Chris Archer over here, or we've got Jose Quintana, and we really like that Eloy Jimenez guy you got there tearing up high A ball. What do you say we package Jimenez and a few arms, and you'll get a shiny brand new starting pitcher? Are you protecting at that point? Are you protecting the young power hitting outfielder?
You know, listen, I am not really qualified to answer that because I haven't scouted Eloy Jimenez. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I haven't seen him, so I don't love. But we talked about this when Jeff Passan was on the show. He was saying to get Chris Archer, you'd have to give up Jimenez. And I say yes, but it is so easy for me to say yes, and it is so tough for Theo Epstein to say yes, right? So, like, right. I acknowledge what I don't know on the front end. But I think that Schwarber is going to be here. The only place he could play is left field. Hayward is going to be here. His best position is right field. Now you have one other outfield position, right? And obviously you can mix and match and you can change some things, but Zobrist has two more years after this one, and you have Hap, and you have Almora, and you have Jay. Not that John Jay is like any sort of cornerstone piece or anything like that, but you do have a bit of a logjam at outfield, and you don't have any sort of depth when it comes to organizational talent at starting pitching. And Chris Archer is 4 years of control with a career ERA in the threes that he did that in the American League East. So the only assumption would be when he comes to the National League that those numbers would go down. And he's healthy, and he's got nasty peripherals with strikeouts to walks, and he's young, and all of that sort of thing. So my inclination is yes, but Jeff Passan thinks that Jimenez could win a batting title and hit 30 home runs. And so if you can do that, he's an MVP. But he's 20 in A-ball, and the window for Cubs World Series is the next 4 years. So it's, you know, I would say yes. I understand why people would say no, but I also acknowledge that Theo Epstein is the one who actually has the information on that, and everybody else who answers that definitively is doing so without ever seeing Eloy Jimenez play baseball. So, you know what I mean? It's just,
yeah.
I don't feel qualified doing that, but in a vacuum, would I give up top prospect at high A in order to get 4 years of a starter now? Yes, of course. But if maybe, for all I know, Theo Epstein thinks of Jimenez as being better than Chris Bryant, and then in that case, the answer would be no. So, you know, does that make sense?
Like, Yeah, absolutely.
I'm just not qualified.
You know what, Danny? First you're ragging on winging it, and now you're ragging at people who just read fan graphs and speak definitively as though they're a general manager. You know, I mean, how many times are you going to cut at the heart of what I do on this show and online? How many times are you just going to you're going to fire a shot across my bow? I'm getting, you know what? I might, if not for the cachet that comes with being a Danny Parkins, I might be a little bit upset.
Hey, you know, listen, it's my first time on the show. I've never listened to the show, so I'm not taking, like, unintentional side swipes. But one of my, you know, if people listen to the show, they will hear me say all the time, I don't know. Like, to me, I'm not, like, an expert necessarily because right. I have a radio show. I just have some access to be able to talk to the experts. Like, we're just people with opinions, and what I hate about people in my business is when they act like they are know-it-alls when they're just parroting the thoughts of other people. And so it's just, to me, it's like, just be honest. And, you know, some people in my field are experts on some things, right? Like, I watched every game Deshaun Watson played the last 3 years at Clemson because my wife went to Clemson. So we watch every Clemson football game on Saturday. So, like, I legitimately feel like I am an authority on whether or not Deshaun Watson is or is not going to be a good NFL quarterback. And I happen to think that he will be a very good NFL quarterback. Like, Russell Wilson with some upside is my read. You know what I mean? So, like,
yeah.
I actually think that I'm qualified to talk about that. I've watched basically every inning of every Cubs game this year. So I feel like I am decently qualified to talk about this particular Cubs team. But Eloy Jimenez, Mitch Trubisky, like Adam Shaheen, I don't fucking know. I'll find out like the rest of you.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, man, that's so refreshing to hear hearing you on the score when I am listening. it's nice to hear somebody that I think who were you interviewing about you and Speaks were talking about the MLB draft, and you were just like, I don't really know these guys. I mean, I can probably name two or three players that are going to be selected in the first round, but besides that, I don't really know who these guys are. I'm not seeking out the information. That's why we have the expert on to talk about it, and we ask him questions to extract information from him. It's refreshing in the business to hear somebody just go, well, I don't know, so I'm going to find somebody who does know and then bring them to you. It's a really nice approach that's especially refreshing in this town.
Well, it just seems so obvious to me to do it that way. So, yeah. I don't think I learned much in journalism school. I learned a lot at the student radio station. But one thing that I like distinctly remember from a professor, the only one who I'm still in touch with, he said, there are only two acceptable answers if you are in the job force, because he was talking about like how you're going to be like completely overwhelmed no matter how well we prepare you for your first job. He says, your boss asks you to do something and you don't know how to do it, or you don't know the answer. There are only two acceptable answers. What are they? And I've always prided myself on like common sense and logic. And do you know what they are? Your boss asks you a question, you don't know the answer to it. There are only two acceptable things to say.
I'll just give it to you.
Yep, I don't know. That's the first one.
Or I'll find out.
Exactly.
Yes! Right. Woo!
Those are the only two acceptable answers. Because now, listen, I consider myself a bullshit artist, right? We talk for a living. You have to fill 4 hours out of the day, that sort of thing, of course. But, like, it's totally acceptable to say, I don't know, as long as you are willing to find out. It's just totally acceptable. No one judges you for it. But if you get exposed for lying or faking it or whatever, then you can have a tremendous credibility hit and you lose trust in the audience, in your boss, in whatever. So I didn't watch North Carolina football last year. I don't know if Mitch Trubisky is good or not. Like, you know, Ryan Pace thinks he is. If he is, Ryan Pace gets a statue built. If he's not, Ryan Pace gets fired. It's pretty simple.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I didn't even know they played a bowl game. I was like, we're talking about the draft. I was like, I don't know. Did they play a bowl game? Because I didn't watch. Because I didn't not interested.
Because they were 8-5 last year. Mm-hmm. Like no one's watching North Carolina football. The ACC was pretty good. They had Clemson, Florida State, and Louisville. Like there was good ACC football to watch, and they weren't. You know what I mean? Like it. And I watched those teams. Like you want my opinion on Lamar Jackson at Louisville? I can tell you about him. You want my opinion of Mitch Trubisky in North Carolina? I'm like, I didn't really watch. I don't know.
I watch a highlight video, and that's about it. Like when they,
of course,
thinking about Trubisky, I'm like, oh, let's see what he does. Oh, okay. Good. There's good parts and there's bad parts, but I don't know which parts we're going to see more often. I have no idea.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now we're talking about the draft here. Now, you're a Chicago guy. I think we're actually like right around the same age. I'm going to be 30 in a month. So we grew up watching the Bulls and watching that dynasty and the dominance that was the Chicago Bulls throughout the NBA for 7 years, or 6 years. But are you ready for the Bulls to rebuild as a fan, as somebody who watches the Bulls, not for your living, not for your job, but do you want the Bulls to rebuild to say, you know what, trade Jimmy Butler for future assets and let's try to rebuild this thing from the ground up? Are you ready for that or do you want them to kind of hold tight?
Yeah, I mean, of course I'm ready for it. Because I don't think you're winning a championship with Jimmy Butler. So the earlier you sell, the more of a return you get. Like that's probably a simple economic concept, right? Closer to his prime with the most years, like the bigger return you can get. But the Bulls' problems are so much bigger than Jimmy Butler. Like the Bulls' problems are organizational. And some of it is on the fans, but I don't blame the fans. It's just a byproduct of it. And so what I mean is, the
Bulls, do you mean showing up?
Yeah, I mean showing up. I mean buying the gear. I mean watching. And yeah. I am as guilty of it as anybody. Like I was so excited. I went to Bulls Mavericks this year, like 4 days after I got the job. because I was
yeah, but
so
you
got to
see Dirk, though. You got to see Dirk. I mean, I'll give you a pass for going to see Dirk.
He was coming off the bench. He had like 12 and 8. Like, it wasn't Dirk. I was going to see the Bulls. I was going to the United Center. Like, I love the Bulls. I love basketball. I love the banners, and I love everything about it. And so, you know, the Bulls were at 103% capacity this year.
Jesus.
They were, you know what I mean? They were number one in attendance, and Ian Happ just hit a two-run homer in the bottom of the fourth to take a 2-0 lead over the Padres.
Oh, but, God, I don't even have it on my TV. I got to turn this on in the K&P Show studios.
Yeah, nice job by Ian Happ. Took a off-speed pitch to right center field. It was very nice.
All right, good. So when people hear this tomorrow, this will be timely news for them. They'll say, I got to check out that Cubs game.
Oh, I know when this was happening. But, yeah, anyway, so it was – so to me, the Bulls are just in a situation where they have an owner who cares more about his baseball team than his basketball team, and his baseball team is rebuilding and on the receiving end of revenue sharing, which means there are some operating economic problems that they have right now. But his basketball team is immensely profitable. And so, you know, you scratch my back, I scratch yours. Like, his basketball team is kind of scratching the checkbook while he bleeds a little bit on the baseball team. Mm-hmm. And he's loyal, and he likes to know everybody and have a history with everybody. And the Bulls have the worst assistant coaches in the NBA. They have the most backwards philosophy. There's nepotism involved. It's incestuous. It's so much bigger than Jimmy Butler. Honestly.
Like, literally incestuous or metaphorically speaking?
Like, metaphorically speaking.
Okay,
like,
all right.
Randy,
I was just wondering.
Randy Brown and Pete Myers are on the staff, and, you know, John Paxson runs the show, and there's like 2 degrees of separation between everybody in Iowa State, and it's just disgusting.
Yeah. And Gar Foreman is really good friends with Michael Reinsdorf, or their wives are really good friends, and that whole thing.
It's not creative, it's not innovative, it's not cutting edge. Like, the rest of the league is going in the direction of three-pointers. The Bulls start a bunch of guys who can't shoot threes. Like, it's horrible.
No, they're getting younger and more athletic, Danny. Come on.
Right. And so it's just – but having said all of that, they had 2 guys in the top 12 of jersey sales last year, and they sold out every game. And there's a season ticket waiting list in some sections. So it's just
stop showing up. Stop.
But it's not on the fans. It's on, you know, I mean, if you want to go and spend your money on the tickets to watch mediocre basketball, because it's a hell of a product in terms of, like, entertainment in the stadium, right? The Lovables and Benny the Bull and the light show and the intro and the other teams and whatever, the food, whatever it is.
Right.
Like, it just is what it is. And so I don't trust Gar Pax to get the right haul for Jimmy Butler if they do trade him. Like, I don't trust them to recruit free agents around Jimmy Butler if he decides to stay here, sign an extension, and try to recruit. Like, I just, as long as they are still running the business to, like, be as relevant as they can be every year, but not having some sort of, like, long-term goal, I just don't trust them at all. So trade Jimmy Butler or not trade. Like, if they traded Jimmy Butler tomorrow, it's probably the right move, but I wouldn't trust the things that they would get back for Jimmy Butler. So it's just, to me, it's just so much bigger than him.
Yeah. You know, so is that the only hope for a Bulls fan that wants a rebuild, that wants to see the team try to return to dominance, to the top half of the Eastern Conference, and to battle for an NBA Finals appearance every single year? Is the only hope for them, like, well, you know, I hope they stay relevant enough that maybe they'll catch fire for one season or 2 seasons, and then maybe you'll get hot in a playoff run and make it to the conference semis or even the conference finals? Is that the only hope while this ownership and management group is still in place? It looks like it is.
You know, I mean, only hope, no. Like, you know, who knows, man? Like, but like, long shots have to come in, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they hit 1.7% chance on Derrick Rose.
Yeah.
And then they got really unlucky with his health. So But it's not like that they have like some like huge elaborate plan to tank in the year in which the number one point guard was the kid from Chicago who's awesome. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
They got really, really, really lucky to get Derrick Rose. And then they got really, really, really unlucky with his injuries. And then, so I think that some sort of shame needs to come to them to realize that how they're running things isn't going to result in championships. But again, I don't know if championships are the priority when they're making a ton of money. Like one thing that I thought was interesting around the Hoiberg to Ohio State rumors that existed for like 12 minutes was,
yeah, I remember that. I got all excited for those 12 minutes and then they went away.
Yeah. Well, it's like, well, it's so, like, what I played out in my head, I think I'm fairly good at like playing the string out to its logical conclusion, like the hypothetical future game. And so one thing that I was thinking about is, what if Hoiberg really did take another job because he was pissed about the Bulls, you know, throwing him under the bus. And so now that, you know, they're off the books with Hoiberg, or, you know, he's getting paid the offset of what he would get paid for the next job. And now the Bulls are in scramble mode to hire a coach. And they call, you know, David Fizdale down there in Memphis, and he's like, "Nah, I'm good." And then they call, like two or three other coaches who they think like should want to come coach the Bulls, and they all like, "Come work for you guys. You guys threw Hoiberg under the bus. You guys signed Rondo and Wade. You guys only draft players from Iowa State. You guys fired Ron Adams. You guys brought back the trainer from the 90s when you had health problems and blamed Tibbs for injuries." Like, you know what I mean? And just all these. And so they got shamed by, not by attendance, because we know that that's not going to happen. But like something happened where it was just a wake up call to the Reinsdorfs, where it was like, holy shit, we cannot attract the best and the brightest to the Chicago Bulls. And that's, to me, maybe the only thing that would lead to organizational overhaul. And I think that's even pie in the sky, because A, Fred Hoiberg's not leaving that money on the table. And B, they've never attracted a marquee free agent, and that hasn't changed their approach to anything. So I think the Bulls are years and years and years away from ever competing for a championship again.
Oh, God. Oh, it just sounds so bad when you say it like that. It just makes me feel, just my stomach turns. I go, oh man, because you're right. There hasn't been that overload. They haven't reached their breaking point, their squeal point, with any of the other myriad of embarrassing things that have happened to them. The sheer hypocrisy that everybody knows that we're committed to getting younger and more athletic, and then here's Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo, and then, you know, your guy coach, you bring in your guy, and then he's getting his nuts cut off by the veterans that you also brought in while being committed to getting younger and more athletic. Nothing has changed. Nothing. There's still talk about we're accountable. There's internal accountability, and nobody's accountable. Nobody's held accountable.
Yeah,
nobody's
just
fired or anything like that.
Yeah, so, I mean, if people are going to be like, you said it was going to be years and years and years, and then 4 years from now they're playing for a championship, something unforeseen and very lucky will have happened. Like, it will not be because of foresight and a tremendous plan. And don't get me wrong, I will take it and I will be there and I will be screaming my head off because I love the Bulls. But like, they didn't plan for Derrick Rose. They got lucky for Derrick Rose. Like, who knows? Maybe Anthony Davis will in 3 years demand a trade to Chicago. Like, maybe.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like maybe that happens. But that will not be because John Paxson and Gar Foreman had tremendous foresight for it.
It's not because they worked the phones and put a deal together and went out and got their guy.
Yeah, because he's born in Chicago, like, right. and he wants to play at home. So,
and Boogie's getting on his nerves. He's like, man, I can't deal with this guy anymore in the locker room. I gotta
right.
go. I gotta get the hell out
so
of here.
So I just have. Yeah. I hope to be proven wrong, but I give them absolutely no benefit of the doubt.
That is a very ominous outlook, Danny. But I can't find fault with your logic anywhere, and I guess that's the worst part. I mean, I want the worst part to be that there's no hope, but the real worst part is that with the case you've laid out, yeah, I mean, you're like a hotshot litigator. I can't find any fault with the case you've made, and that is the scariest part for me. That is the part where I go, oh no, oh shit, This team, this organization is rotten from the root, and there's no hope, and I can't find any fault with this guy's logic. And, oh, boy, that's not good. That is not good at all. Oh.
Sorry, man. Sorry.
I know.
I specialize in logic.
It's like facing your own mortality. It's like when you have that quiet moment where you realize and you go, oh, I got to stop thinking about this. It's bad. And then, oh, well, you know what? That's why you're on the radio, though. I got to say, it's fun watching a professional do their work when they're really good at their job. And throughout this 45 minutes is almost this hour. Listening to you talk, I've kind of let you take the reins because you have demonstrated why you are on the radio for 4 hours a day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. on WSCR, the largest sports station in the third largest media market in the country. So bravo, good sir.
Thanks, man.
You are talented. Now, I want to ask you one question before we close out the show. Thank you so much for donating your time to this very crappy podcast. I want to ask you, who plays more games for their respective team next season? Or, well, in the coming season in their respective sport? Mitch Trubisky or Jimmy Butler? If you had to put money, if you were laying a bet, who starts more games for their respective team in their respective sport, Mitch Trubisky or Jimmy Butler next season?
I mean, Jimmy Butler.
You don't think they're moving him?
No. Would you listen to what I just said? Like they are committed to staying relevant so that they can keep the building full, so that they can make money. They'll be the 8 seed or the 6 seed in perpetuity with Jimmy Butler. They're not trading Jimmy Butler.
Like, damn it,
Jimmy Butler's going to start 77 games next year. Mitch Trubisky is going to probably start 0, maybe 1 or 2. So. The answer is Jimmy Butler. You'd have to give me like Jimmy Butler minus 70 games, like for that to be the spread.
All right, I'll give you that. Jimmy Butler minus 70. Then we'll account for that. We'll account for the disparate level of disparate number of games that each sport plays.
I'll still probably take Jimmy Butler because I won't bet on his injury, and I don't think that Trubisky. Is going to I don't think they want him to start. I don't think he needs to start. So I would still take Jimmy Butler, but with the spread of 70, it'd be a lot closer than the original question.
All right. Well, and he's one more all NBA team away from Supermax money. Jimmy Butler is, I think.
Yeah, but there's a misnomer with the Supermax. The Supermax is just that he's eligible to receive it. It's not that it's like mandated. So they just. The ceiling that they can negotiate to is higher. Like I can't, even with all of the things that I said about the Bulls and incompetence, I can't imagine that 2 years from now, after two more years of wear and tear on Jimmy Butler's body, they think like, you know what we should do? We should give this guy $240 million. Like I think that
they gave Dwayne Wade 23 with a player option.
Yeah. For 2 years. That would be for 5 or 6. I think that there's a chance Jimmy Butler signs another contract in Chicago, but my bet is that Jimmy Butler ends up maybe getting traded for pennies on the dollar next season this time or next trade deadline, and we see him play another year fruitlessly in Chicago this year. And then if he goes to free agency, he doesn't re-sign with the Bulls. He signs with a Western Conference team and hangs out with Mark Wahlberg and does something with fashion or movies or something in LA. Like I just, I will be even as cynical as I am on the state of the Bulls, I will be floored if they give him a $200 million contract in 2 years. That would be just remarkably dumb.
I will hold you to that, Danny. I will remember this. I'll write it down somewhere, and then when that happens, I will come to you and I'll be like, Danny, you were wrong, and then you'll say, okay, because I didn't know. So now I'm just gonna.
Yes, exactly, because I was just guessing. And if the Bulls ever sign Jimmy Butler to a $200+ million contract, I will come back on the podcast.
Oh, so you're not even going to come back? You're not even going to return until then?
I'm just kidding.
That's strike three and you're out, my friend. I was going to give you a chance to pitch your show to my prestigious listeners, rabid sports talk fans that love to hear guys talking sports. But now, you know what?
I'm just kidding. All right. The show, I thought we were going to talk more about the show and radio and whatnot, but this was easy. This was just sports.
I didn't want to turn it into a referendum on me because I've been working to get into the terrestrial radio business and just wanted some was playing around with the idea of talking about that and your journey. But with the Russell stuff and the NBA draft coming up, I figured it was just a better play.
Whatever you want, man. It's it's your world. I'm always happy to talk about me. If we're done here, yeah, people can find me on Twitter at Danny Parkins, and they can listen to The Score between 9 and 1 or check the podcast. But keep listening to this podcast. I enjoy supporting the audio medium, so I appreciate you having me on.
All right, he's the midday host, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. on WSCR, The Score in Chicago, or 670thescore.com. What is the show has its own domain, right? Is it SpiegelandParkins.com?
SpiegelandParkinsShow.com, I believe.
Okay, SpiegelandParkinsShow.com is where you can check him out. Danny, thank you for coming on the podcast. Really appreciate it. And despite your hurtful jokes and hurtful remarks and digs at this show, I think we'll extend to you an open invitation. If you ever want to come on, you're ever bored, shoot me a DM on Twitter or whatever. Be like, hey, man, I want to talk on the podcast and siphon off some more of your listeners to help out in the ratings. Just let me know.
Oh, I'm unfollowing you on Twitter as soon as I hang up.
Son of a bitch! Damn it, Danny!
No, man, it was fun. Hit me up anytime if you want me to come on. It was cool. I appreciate it.
I hope you lose your next bet. I hope you lose whatever it is. I don't know if you're going to be betting props on the NBA draft. Whatever it is, I hope you lose. How about that? Get back at you where you like to bet.
I'm fine. Yeah, keep trying. You can insult me more next time. But no, seriously, thank you for having me on and the interest. It was fun. I appreciate it.
You guys did a 2-1 in the ratings in February. How's that, huh?
Yeah,
when nobody's listening in the off season of most sports. Yeah,
you have access to Men 25-54. Or are you like everyone else on the internet that only reads 6+ and doesn't understand how the business works?
I don't understand how the business works. You taught me that, Danny. I always say I don't know how things work if I don't. But I don't know, but I can find out. Huh? How's that?
Do it.
See?
Do
there
it.
Go.
Do it.
Find so, out. Well, then, it's good to hear that it's successful, though. It's good to hear that you're successful because I do. I'm talking as a listener, I was critical at first, and I think you guys even recently addressed that about the figuring each other out on the air, you and Matt Spiegel. And I don't know when it was, but I feel as though you guys have gelled. And it's good to hear that that despite, you know, the 6+ overall shares that the people are listening and you guys are going to be in business for a while. That's actually good to hear.
Well, I never said we were successful. I just said that your numbers were wrong.
But no.
We're just fine. I plan to be around for a very, very long time. And, how many guys do you talk to for 4 hours a day?
You mean not counting myself, not counting the voices in my head? Nobody.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So then tomorrow I want you to meet a total stranger and then have a 4-hour conversation with him the next day, every day, in front of a live audience. And it's just, you know, it's not easy. So we built chemistry. We didn't know each other. He's 46 years old with a kid. I'm 30 years old without, and we met each other on a Monday and started a show on a Tuesday. So our chemistry built. So people who tuned in the first day and then were like, wow, these guys sound like they don't know each other. This show sucks. And then tuned out and never turned it back in. Like, okay, well then you don't understand how radio works. Like I knew there were going to be growing pains and an adjustment period and awkwardness, the difference between me and other people maybe is that I acknowledge them and I like to steer into the skid and point out the awkwardness and like laugh at it and not take myself too seriously. But no, the ratings are fine and they're climbing and I have a good contract and we'll be here for a while. And Speaks and I we're good and we're tight and the show's getting better and I expect to be together for a long, long time. So I hope people check out the show. And, you know, but yeah, I found that criticism really, really amusing. Like, wow, these guys sound like they don't know each other. Well, yeah.
We don't.
That's kind of how it worked. So, you know, it's just, it's not a natural thing. It was an arranged marriage in front of a live audience. And then we had to do it again the next day and then the next day and then the next day. So, you know, it's people are like, wow, your chemistry is so much better than when you started. Well, yeah, no shit. That's kind of how it works. So, you know, people who were critical of the first few weeks or month of the show, like, yeah, trust me, I was critical of it too.
All right. Well, you know, you made a believer out of me. Not that that matters, but I was aware of it, but then just listening, and it's, you guys have gelled and you're off and running. And, you know, I will vouch to the listeners of this podcast that the Spiegel and Parkin show, 9 a.m. to 1 on The Score, is worth your listen. Maybe 1 o'clock, maybe you want to venture elsewhere, but that's a personal preference of mine. But 9 a.m. to 1, The Score, is it's happening, man. I really enjoy it and wish you and Matt the best in your professional lives. Good on you guys. Thank you, Danny. You can follow him at Danny Parkins. And again, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. on WSCR The Score and 670thescore.com, SpiegelandParkinsShow.com. You can follow me at John's Voices. Thank you guys for listening to the KMP Show. We will catch you next time. We are out. Bye.